You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Jen Melville. We talk about her decision to walk away from a career in higher education that she had had for over a decade. So there are a lot of reasons that I think you're going to enjoy today's conversation. One for sure is that Jen is really genuine and giving and aware of her motivations, and she talks about how she made these decisions. So that is really, really good. We talk about leaving the job. We talk about what happened next. We talk about what she thought her life would look like and then what it actually does look like and what she's doing today and how she got there. So on the surface, this is a story about decisions and career change. But we do also talk about family planning, fertility. We talk about banking. and there is a random conversation in there about moose. Yeah, the animal. So there's that. So, are you ready? I'm ready. Let's do this. Jen Melville, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a great chat today?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. All right. I start most of my interviews, almost all of them, by asking people where they call home on the blue marble. Where are you these days?
Oh, boy. Okay. So I live in Connecticut, but my heart, I'm originally from New Hampshire. So I would say Connecticut's my home, but I still have a little piece of me up in New Hampshire.
Very fun. I used to go before I had kids, before I was tied to, well, maybe not, some after they were born, but we used to go to Franconia Notch to do leaf peeping because I'm in the tropics. So we would make a trip to that part of the country to see the leaves, which seems like a lame thing. But if you grow up with fall and then you don't have fall as an adult, it's a fun thing to do. And there was that rock that fell off the side of the mountain several years ago.
The old man in the mountain.
And he's no more. He's just kimpf, all done being the old man in the mountain.
I haven't seen him in so long. I think they reconstructured him. Like,
oh,
I think
really?
He's up there, but I think it's with like wires and stuff. It's not natural anymore.
I don't know if that counts as much, but you know, it's so much. One of the other things about New Hampshire that used to always crack me up is there's all the signs that, you know, there will be moose around. And I was always very eager to potentially see a moose, but it was, I was never in the right place. It's never in the right place to see one in the wilds. We saw other things, but never moose.
Not really in New, I mean, I know the signs, but I've never seen a moose in New Hampshire. I've seen a moose in Maine. But not
that would do. So yeah, exactly. So there you go. All right. So in a second, we're going to get to the official topic, which is not moose or rock formations. But I want to ask you one more question, warm up to get to know you a little better, give the audience a chance to know you a little better. Share with us something about you, like a hobby, a passion, a pastime that's not related to work or family.
Oh gosh, you're asking like a workaholic. So I would say like when I have or choose to have some downtime, I do love to read a lot. I read a lot as a kid and like before kids, you know, every single night in bed. So I'm trying to do that more often than I have in the past. But I also love to go thrifting.
Ooh, okay.
Antique stores, thrift stores. They have great ones in New Hampshire, Connecticut, not so much. But I love to find like a good deal.
We don't have great thrifting in South Florida. Probably this is true all through the tropics. Like stuff, we're really hard on stuff, so things don't last as well. And many, many years ago, when I was the age where you were furnishing houses and trying not to like spend, you know, before designers and before you could actually afford anything. And one of my friends was like, well, you kind of have to drive to North Carolina because they have much better trash than we do. And I was like, that is so ridiculous, but okay, fair. You know, fair. All right. So now to get to the topic of the day that you proposed, leaving your career in higher education and what happened after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I'd love to talk about it.
All right, let's do it. Now, I want to back up and ask a couple questions if I can. First is, I'm curious what subject matter you were teaching in higher education.
So I was not a teacher.
I was not a
professor. I worked in administration. So I worked in college housing. So
Oh, really?
living on campus. Yep.
I am right in the throes of that. Fourth of four kids going to college next year. We just completed the housing deposit form for the new NI. So I have, and I signed up to listen to the parental podcasts. All of them are different. Every single
They didn't
system is
even
different.
have parental podcasts when I was there.
Is so funny
Not
to
that
think.
long ago, but things change so rapidly.
It is so funny how it works and how different kids are different ways. But all right, so I had a bit of misinformation. I told you when you said higher education, I was like, okay, teacher, but I was wrong about that. Okay, so the other question is a little bit more purpose-driven and deeper. We're going to talk about walking away from that, but first I want to talk. So to do that, I want to back up and say, hey, what attracted you to that career when you picked it?
Honestly, it felt in true transparency, I think it was a little bit of laziness, lack of confidence, and what I was naturally good at. So when I was in college, I, lived on campus. I was a resident assistant who's like the college students in charge of the floor. And I did that for 4 years in college, and I loved it. I liked it a lot. I liked being a leader. I changed my major a bunch of times in school. Like, I wanted to be a small business accountant for a long time, for a really long time. But like, when things got hard, I think I got lazy and I was like, oh, like economics is really hard. Like, I don't do that. Like, so I switched to like sociology, which is like, the study of people and like leadership. And that topic was easy to me, but also felt the most natural. So when it came to like deciding a career, I was like, well, I didn't have a lot of family support in true transparency. So in terms of like, I needed to do something that I knew that I was good at and I could immediately make money.
Okay, so when you say family support, it was like you needed a job.
I needed a job.
Right. There wasn't anybody who was coming and saying, we'll pay your bills for 2 years while you figure it out.
Correct. And I didn't even have, honestly, a home to go back to. So when I was living at school, I summer breaks and stuff, I either stayed at school or I, slept on my aunt's couch. Like, I didn't have a home to go back to. So this was a very attractive career because when I was good at it, I really liked it, and it came with housing.
I can
So
absolutely see that. I can absolutely see that. And I think that's a really helpful reflection to make. The follow-up question to that is, how much of this do you think you were aware of when you were in your 20s
oh
versus
gosh,
now that when you look back?
not very much, I don't think. Like, like in my mind, I feel like if I was a little bit more, like I said at the beginning, like confident, I feel like I would have, like I can do this. Like, I have more of the like I can do this attitude now, which played into leaving my career. But yeah, I don't know that I had it now, but when I reflect on it, there was like a lot of like scared young adult there just
Absolutely.
surviving.
Well, no, absolutely. And where, so this is a non-scripted question, but you probably do know this because of your corporate background and where does security and safety fall in your like core value set, like the things that motivate you, do you know?
Now or then?
Either one.
I think it's always, I have always erred on the side of caution. Like, I'm
Caution,
not
that's
a
it.
risk taker. I'm not, like, I like to know the outcome before I even to do the action. And I'm still that way. Like, because I have a lot of built up, I mean, trauma feels like such a big word, but like trauma from like things being really uncertain when I was younger. And so now as an adult, we're I'm doing great. I have a loving family, a loving husband, all the support I need, but there's still that person that's like, don't act if it's not safe or supportive.
So yeah, there's a phrase that I use, which is confidence, right? Comes from competence, right? And you can't have confidence unless you know, so most of us are like, I give you like a task, like pouring a glass of water, you're probably pretty sure you can do it because you've got all this, practice and you've got a lot of evidence that it's possible. But if something happens to shatter that confidence, or the sense that you can do it, it's a lot harder to be brave. It's a lot harder to be brave, and every knowing that is really interesting. So I think those are all really, really, really good points. So then, This answer might not be related to anything. And so, what kind of careers did your parents have?
So I was a child of teen parents,
Okay.
with my mother's parents from when I was in second grade till I graduated high school with my own parents.
We
So
would
my
call that a
mom,
multi-generational home
yes,
in the
now it's
word.
like,
Yeah,
not as
exactly.
uncommon as it before it had a very negative connotation, but my mom didn't have a career. She worked most of the time at she was like drove like one of those like auto part trucks, like where drop
Okay.
auto parts. She worked at a sandwich place. I'm trying, those are the two jobs I remember her having. My dad worked in construction my whole life, like
All
from when
right.
he was my grandfather owned a dirt company, grew up, they all drove tractor trailer trucks. They all, so my dad was a construction guy. He did like heavy equipment, like excavators and stuff like that. So that's what my parents
So
did.
they
My
were employees, but like sort of, we would call them gig workers now. Like they were constantly, they had a thing where they were not a lot of guarantee or security. And not a tenured academic position or anything with that. Okay, so when you took the job in higher education, when you did that, what kind of thoughts did you have, or maybe hopes, like if you can remember, about how long you thought you'd stay in that job or that career?
I don't think I knew the answer. I feel like and still now I have a hard time setting long-term goals. And a
Okay.
part of that is because like I'm afraid of the outcome. But I think I felt like this is a comfortable job. I'm making money. I bought a car. I had housing. Like I didn't actually pay rent or a light bill until I was like in my mid-30s. Short little funny story. So when I finally left higher ed, I had to like move off campus. So I lived on a college campus for free, at three different institutions for like over 12 years. And so when I finally had to like get a real apartment, I show up there, like we sign the lease, we do all the things. And I said to my friend, and she's like, "How is it?" And I was like, "Oh, it's great, but like, I don't like the lights aren't working." And she was like, "Well, Jen, did you call the electric company?" And I'm like, "I don't even know." Like I was like, "No." She's like, "Do you have internet?" I'm like, "No." She's like, "Jen, you have to turn on the internet, you have to turn on the lights, you have to turn on the water." And like I didn't know. Like
Right, because
I
all of that had been
it
done
was
as
all
part
had
of
been
your contract.
provided. So I like had no idea how to as a very, as a very independent person at this point, I was like, "Oh, okay."
There are other versions of that, though. There are definitely other versions of that. Yours was living on campus, but people who grew up in cities where they rent all the time. So, like, my brother-in-law was in his mid-40s before he bought a house and then went through 18 months of discovery of all the misery that it falls to you when you are the owner. There's no landlord to call. And he would call us and vent, and we were just like, this is just nothing has gone wrong. This is the joy of homeownership. Get out there and mow your lawn, buddy. That's what happens. So, but it is hilarious. It is hilarious that that is one of the things. All right. So you shared with me that you left this job. So we're talking about after a decade, 12 years, you left this job because of burnout and what I'm calling generalized misery. But I crack myself up with that naming. But can you describe for you how that was feeling at the time? Because you're past it, you're through it. So.
It was a very rocky it's interesting. I have like a big and I'll give like a snippet to like what I ended up going into is so I was working as assistant director. I was living on campus. At this point my boyfriend had moved in with me and he was kind of in the same boat. He lived with his mom forever. So like we were both like fish out of water. And I had started a like side hustle, like selling
Right.
sex toys, like
The
Tupperware.
yes. Was it the romance? Was it that company? What's the
Your
name of
romance,
Your Romance? That what it was? Okay. All right.
And I was just doing
Not
it for
that I've ever been
fun.
invited to a party or that I don't know a dozen other people who've done it. Okay.
So I just started it because again, such out of not because I wanted something fun to do. I like to have multiple streams of income. Like I feel like even back then I never knew what was going to happen with money and I was always nervous about it. So I started doing that. Well, it didn't go over well with the administration at the school I was working at.
I can see
And
that.
I was not doing anything wrong. Like there was no like rule or anything. It just made them uncomfortable. And so they said, either you can leave on your own or we will terminate you at the end of the school year.
What a
Or
delightful offer from them.
this is like in April. And like in a college setting, typically you look for a job like April, May, and then you start it like in June. And so I had said to them, okay, like, because again, I was like, oh my God, like I've never done anything wrong in my life.
Right.
And I was like, and so I was like, okay, well, I'll leave, but can I stay until July? And so they let me finish out like the school year. I stayed until July. And then I left. So, yeah, I thought I was going to be there forever. I don't know. So
Yeah.
when I left, it was like such a blessing in disguise because I wouldn't have chosen to leave. Like
Okay.
I wouldn't have had the confidence to say, like, you're miserable, you're burnt out. There's so much I can't even imagine. I have my best friend is in college housing still. And I'm like, I can't even imagine the politics now. 'Cause like, I mean, I worked at a private school in my last job and it was just 24/7 on the phone, and I always felt like I was covering my butt. Like I had to document everything, and I was like, I was losing what little confidence I had because I was always getting questioned about decisions I was making. And I was like, oh my God, this is awful. But again, the fear of not only do I have to find a job, but now I need to find a place to live. Like if I
Yeah.
leave, it's like a twofold. So I don't know that I would have left on my own. I don't know how long I would have survived. But I was forced to, so I
You
didn't
were
have a choice.
forced to, exactly. All right. So one of the things that I'm looking for, I don't know about you with your coaching and what you do, but one of the things that I'm always on the lookout for with people I talk to people is when the expectation they have doesn't match the lived experience, right? And so that's the reason I was asking about some of these things. Like that's what those questions were about. Like if you had gone into this with this idea that it was your dream job that was going to last forever, but what you experienced was that it was a very politicized academic environment with a lot of drama, so on and so forth, right? So anyway, that's what those come up. So I think I know what you do today, which is not in higher education, not in residential housing. But I think also there's a story about how you got from where you were to where you got to. There's a gap of a couple of years, and I want to walk through this. When you were forced to make the jump, you had a side hustle going, you were hedging your career bets all the way because you were a conservative risk taker. What was your first plan for what you were going to do when this job went away? And also tell us some of the other things that might have been going on in your life that relate to this story.
So my first plan ha ended up being my plan a couple of times in my journey.
Okay.
And
Was it a good plan? We'll find out.
I mean, we'll find out. Like but what I think what I want the message to be is like I just kept act I was too fearful to
Okay.
take the risk. I was too. So my plan was when I left higher ed, I was making a lot of money selling sex toys. Like I was going to people's houses. Like I had replaced my income. Like I wasn't even using my income. I was just dumping it into the bank. So I was like, well, there's a lot of people in this field who do this, parties full time.
Full time, yeah.
So I was like, I'm gonna do that. Like that's gonna be my career. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
A lot of money. So I was like, I'll do it. But there was so much into the like, oh, can I really do it? Can I really do it? Can I not do it? Like I loved the security of no matter what I did, I had a paycheck, even though that turned out to not be secure. And so I was very fearful to like put it all in. So I did that probably for like August or September. And then the fear started creeping up and I was like, I got to go get a job. And now I have rent. Now my boyfriend came, now husband came with me, so he had a good job. He worked for transit in the city. And we were doing okay. Like again, nothing like our lights weren't turned off or anything like that. It was like in very much internal.
Anticipatory anxiety, like it's the shoe will fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was still doing parties all along, and then I think my first job was I was a manager of a doggy daycare in the city.
Ooh, fun. So
Yeah.
let's talk about, so where do you think this idea that the job was security might, this story that you were telling yourself that the job was security might have come from? Did it come from watching people you knew or just from,
It came from, I think it came from watching like the opposite. Like my mom's job was never secure, my dad's job was never secure. And so I like needed to hold on to security. So I was like, I'm not going to go into a job that's not secure.
Okay, so it was not just a job. It was like, I want to secure a job that didn't look like my parents' jobs because you knew that
Correct.
that was not secure. All right, that's the reason I asked, because it's like, if you grow up with parents who like, so like my in-laws, they were teachers. They got like one job when they were 27 and stayed in that school till they like retired, right? They switched like roles. They're the only people I know actually who have a history like that. But if you grow up with parents like that, I think you do, it's reasonable to think, okay, you get a job and you have that forever. And then but you did not actually have that. So that's why. So it was sort of a twisted thing, which is an interesting thing because you can tell yourself whatever story you want about it.
Yeah,
All
exactly.
right. All right. So very good. So you get a job as a
So I
doggy
went to the
daycare.
doggy daycare. I lasted about 3 weeks because I was like, I lived right outside New York City. So I was commuting to New York City, never took a city bus in my whole life. I like didn't even know how to pay. I was like, do I put the coins in? Like, is there a car? I'm like, I'm from the country. Like, and I was like, I had to switch trains. Like, it was such a nightmare. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, and so I said to my husband, who wasn't my husband at the time, but you get it. I said, I don't want to do this. Like, I gotta quit. This is like, I'm miserable, you know? And so then I became a part-time bank teller.
Okay,
I was like, are we?
which means that if you ha which means you face your money if you're counting money.
Yeah. And I mean, I
Yeah.
loved accounting. Like, I
Yeah.
loved money, you know, transactions. And so I actually really liked it. But it wasn't going to pay the bills. You know what I mean? So from like August to, I would say, like December, January of that year, I was like a part-time bank teller. And then I moved my way up into this credit union. I worked as like a member service. I was doing like loans. And then I went behind the scenes and I did facilities management, which was a lot what I was doing at the college, like facilities and operations. And then I went into training and development. So
And
I
the
did
whole time you're doing the party business on the side.
the whole time. Yeah,
Okay.
like just banking the money that I can, saving up a lot of money. And then I don't even know the timeline, probably for a year and a half. I was in like that was like, but I wasn't passionate about it.
Right.
Like I was commuting an hour. I mean, at that point, like later on, my husband and I bought a house and it was like an hour away from where I was working. And I was like, I didn't like the job. The people were micromanaging me, which I hate to be micromanaged. I'm a terrible employee, by the way. Obviously.
As people who eventually branch off into, but it's funny. It's funny with all of my like volunteer work, with all of the PTA things and volunteer sort of things. It's really interesting how you can tell if anybody has ever worked in a bank because the way you deal with cash is so totally different than anybody else. And I was doing something a couple months ago, and I was doing something. And they were like, "Hey, can you double check this?" And I was like, "Sure." And I like clear off the table. I make my space for counting this cash, and I make all the piles. Like I'm like, these are where this is going to go, and this is where this is going to. Everything's turned a different way. And the person watching me was like, "How old were you when you worked in a bank?" And I was like, "Oh, good question."
Turning the
It's
money
like,
around, you
yeah,
know, like,
exactly. It's like once you've counted it, it goes. So anyway, that was like anybody who's ever worked as a teller is like, this is how we handle cash. And other people are like, no, there's no reason to do that. And you're like, no, there are reasons. There are reasons. You may not have to know the reasons, but there are reasons. So, all right. So very good. So, what else is, so you've got a job, you've got a boyfriend who becomes your husband over time.
yes.
You've got your side hustle. You're realizing as you go that while you've got a lot of strengths, you're not particularly a good employee, which is a fun quality to have. And so what else is going on in your life that is adding stress?
Yeah, so when I still, excuse me, when I still worked at the college, my then boyfriend, we got pregnant by accident. Now we're in our
Okay.
mid-30s. We both were kind of like, this is like forever, like we're too old for this. And but we had a miscarriage at 10 weeks. And then about 6 months later, we got pregnant again and had an ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
So I lost my right tube, obviously lost the pregnancy. So that happened while I still worked at the college. And then, we left the college, but then we realized like, oh, we want to, have a family. I'm getting older. Now we're like in this weird infertility journey. So when we moved to our first apartment, that's where we like got engaged, got married. We bought our first house. And when we bought our first house, it was really the tail end of this infertility. Like we were trying for probably close to 2 years after the ectopic. We weren't getting pregnant, weren't getting pregnant. And I'm getting older, 35, 36,
Right, the
and I was
calendar only goes one way.
yeah. And like unexplained infertility was what we were told. And so I hated my job. Like I was miserable.
Right.
But I will say, my husband did say, like, in that 6 months of like weird career transition, I think that's when I was the most happy because I was like trying new things. Although I still had a little bit of money anxiety, like we were okay, but like I started, it gave me space to like kind of deal with the infertility thing. But then when we settled, I was working full time at the bank. I was commuting, and then we were like, you know what? This is not going to happen. Like, we're not going to be parents. Like, my husband has incredible insurance. We have, we had to do like six rounds of in vitro, I mean, IUIs, which they like inject the sperm up into the egg and just let your body do its thing.
And were you taking, they giving you hormones
Oh,
to,
yeah. I had to like
so you're
strap
doing the hormone
myself.
roller coaster?
Yep. And I had to do six rounds of that, even though my doctor was like, you have one tube. Like, you're not going to get pregnant. Like, so she was fighting for IVF, which is where like take everything out and they do it in
Yeah.
the petri dish and put it back in. So we had three rounds of IVF. We did two. So we did two retrievals, which again, lots of hormone, doctor's appointments every single morning to test my blood. And then we did one transfer, a frozen transfer, and it didn't stick.
Okay.
And so we were like, oh, like this. So we're like, we're not gonna, we're this is it. We have one IVF left, like for my husband. And then that was it for us. Like, if it didn't work that third time, we were like, But in the interim, I was like, let's do things that make us happy.
Okay.
So I was like, let's buy a house. We got the dog I've always wanted. I totally support rescues, but I was like, shit, if I can't have a baby, I want a French bulldog.
Right. I'm gonna pick my designer, but everything else is not working the way I want it to. I'm taking control of this one part. Designer
Yeah.
dog. Here we go.
So yeah, we bought, we moved. So when we closed on our house, we closed on our house like I in like late I had found out 2 weeks before we closed on our house that I was pregnant.
There you go. All
IVF.
right.
So
So that's a lot going on. Big time stressors in your job over like 6 years,
yeah, I would say,
right?
yeah,
Not
like
six
six.
years. Quitting a job or, being forced to make that decision, huge change. Starting a family, a huge change. You had twins, I think is the way this
Yes,
works out.
I
You
had
have twins.
a boy and a girl.
Lovely, super
Yeah.
exhausting. Not a lot of sleep for you there. Nope. The hormone thing, I've never done it. I don't know anybody who says, I mean, all of the IVF and the fertility thing, like a gift of modern medicine, to be sure. Nobody describes it as an easy, fun process that I've talked to.
I mean, it's timed. Like I remember being at parties because I was still partying, having to stop the presentation and go into the bathroom and give myself a shot.
That's
You
amazing.
know, like, 'cause you have to do things at a certain time.
Oh my gosh. And I always want, yes, that's crazy. That's amazing. Okay, so you describe this as a roller coaster. As a roller coaster, which I think is really interesting because we are passengers on the roller coaster. Like, so when we, it's not like, it's not like, so at this time in this roller coaster of the journey, were you at any point second guessing getting out of the housing academic world? Were you ever thinking, the answer here is to go back to school? Okay,
Nope.
never.
I never wanted to go back. Like I said, I think it truly was. I was like divine intervention. Like I was forced to do something that was like probably beneficial to my health. Although, the subsequent years after were a little bit rocky, a little bit up and down. But I think overall, like I would have never excelled. Like it, what I know my skills to be now, although I still doubt them sometimes, like I would have not been successful there.
No, I think that that is really interesting. So, like, I like to talk about people about the choices they make and the changes they make, and not making a move is a, like not doing something is like a decision of inertia, right? But there's like, it seems like it's security, it seems like it's all of those things. So, even though it wasn't your choice to leave that job, you did lean into it. And then it was sounds like it was a series of over 6 years making different decisions that led you into, so you were doing the party business, you were doing the banking. At what point did you discover coaching and how? Or was it part of the pure romance like sort of thing?
It's definitely started there because, a lot of, there's different pure romance consultants. Like, again, I'm a relationship builder. I, can build immediate connections with people. So, yeah, I was going to these parties. I was having fun. I was making a lot of money. But like, so if you've ever been to a party, like people come into, they do the little presentation, then they go into the room and talk to the consultant. But like the stories I was hearing, like my marriage is falling apart. I'm 70 years old and never had an orgasm. Like, and I was like, oh gosh, like as someone who's highly educated, I mean, I have a master's degree, and like, and very versed in human interaction. I was like, yeah, this lube or vibrator is going to help you, but that's not going to solve the issue that's going on. And so, again, I think, it's so funny. I'm having an epiphany right now in this moment with you, Amy. So when I decided to leave like banking, again, not, I was miserable, like, and it wasn't ness it was a choice, but almost not a choice, because I left because I had twins. And I was like, what am I gonna do? I live an hour away. Like, I'm not making that much money. I don't like, and I get the whole like, I don't like as a household strategist, like where people will say, like, oh, like I'm gonna work to pay for daycare. Like, no, you're gonna work to pay to further your career, like as you have. Like, so,
Which
but
is
I
not
wasn't.
necessarily a bad choice. There are many people who are in professions where, love it or hate it, that is the deal you're going to make with yourself because you can't come back after a 10-year pause real easily. Like, and so, you know.
So I wasn't making, number one, I wasn't making, I would be putting my salary towards daycare for
Right,
twins.
exactly.
Both my husband and I would be over an hour away. So like, do you put them in, would we move? Like, do we buy a new house? Like, would we put them in daycare near where we work or near where we live? Like, it was all these decisions. And we took so long to have them. I was like, I don't really want them to be taken care of by someone else. And I wasn't in a career that I was like, oh, I can't wait to come back to this. And so I was like, okay. So I did, I'm a super planner. I got the Aflac insurance and the paid family leave from New York and all this thing. So I set myself up, and they were born in February. And so I was like, okay, I'm going on maternity leave.
This is the whole like this is the conversation you have with your girlfriends when you were like planning your maternity leave that is actually like there is an exit at the end that you don't say out loud.
And
Like,
they knew
yeah.
it, but again, I didn't say it.
Everybody knows that it's happening to you. The HR person is like, so your disability, wink, wink.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I left in June. So they were born in February, and I had to, my disability, my paid family leave, my Aflac insurance had all run out by June. A week before it ran out, I went in and resigned. It wasn't a surprise. So then I, now what? I'm home with kids.
You're home with two
Still
kids,
doing
spit
parties.
out
Like,
diapers.
yeah. So I would say that first year, so 2019, so they were born in February. I left. So I stopped making an income in June. And then from June to, when the pandemic happened, like we were okay. I was still doing parties. I was making enough money. Like, my husband still had a good job. Like, he very, thank God for like a very, he's the very stable one in this whole thing.
And insurance. He had your insurance,
He
your
had
medical insurance.
insurance,
That's a
like,
big deal, yeah.
and it was fine. Like, I didn't really feel stress. Like, I loved infants. Like, I mean, yes, I had twins, so it wasn't, an easy road, but they were good babies. Like, we just kind of had fun. And then when the pandemic happened, my claim to fame, I guess I would say, was in May of that year, I sold $25,000 worth of products.
So, and that
One.
was during lockdown.
That was during lockdown
So,
because now
virtual
I wasn't going
parties.
to people's houses. I was doing online
Yeah.
parties, but I could do five or six Zoom parties and like 12, like what we used to call Facebook parties. So I had this whole system in my living room, like packages, because we shipped everything ourselves. Like, I would get a big box, and my grandmother lived with us at the time, and I'd be like, "All right, nanny." She's like in her 80s. I'm like, "All right, take out." She's like looking at vibrators, like
I love
dealing
it.
them out, like, and I was like, "All right, put the sticker on it." Like, I had this whole like operation like happening. So yeah, that's, and it kind of fed through the pandemic. And then in October of 2020, we decided to move. I lived in Long Island at the time, and we didn't like Long Island. The schools were terrible. I mean, my kids were only infants at the time, but the schools were terrible. And we decided to move to Connecticut because his commute would be the same down to the city, but just in a different direction. And I could be closer to, my best friend lives in Massachusetts, and I have, my grandmother had lived in New Hampshire. Well, she went back to New Hampshire. So yeah, when we moved here in October 2020, I had some clientele here a little bit. So I had a few parties happening. I was still doing online parties, but towards the end of the 2020 was like a weird time where people didn't want to have people into their homes anymore.
Right.
Still. But they also were like over Zoom and over Facebook. And like, so there was a period of time where I was like, okay, well, what am I gonna do? Like, I felt like this like 20-year-old again, like, okay, well, now what?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a worker, like, I love to work. I was like, what am I gonna do? Like, and then that's coaching sort of kind of morphed into it. So I looked up, like, is there such thing as like a relationship coach or a sex coach? Or like, I knew I didn't want to be a therapist. I didn't want to go back to school, in true transparency. I didn't want to get
Yeah.
another degree. I didn't want to pay the money for it. But therapy, like, it's like too emotional. Like, I wanted more action.
Okay.
And so yeah, I found a sex coaching certification. I did go back to school, but for certified. So yeah, I was certified in sex coaching. It took me about 18 months
There
to
you go.
get it. And right at the get-go, right from my start, I started coaching. Because I
Yeah.
have a business mindset. Like, I got started a business, started a website, created programs. Like, in higher ed, I did events. Like, I created programs. I did educational workshops. Like, I was coaching, like advising. Like,
Yeah.
this is something I already knew. I just needed the, I would say, like, the sex education, like what happens in female bodies, what happens in male bodies, like things like that. As far as like coaching and business setup, like, I already had those skills already.
Okay.
So yeah, then I, it sort of morphed into that afterwards.
Into that. All right. So that is very, so that's how you discovered coaching. That's not a super uncommon. How old were you in 2021?
40.
40. Okay, so I have this thing I call it the rule of 35, which is when you're 35 years old, like whatever your hobbies are or whatever you're interested in, somebody will offer that you can then be a teacher or a coach for that. So like if you're working in a bank, that's when you step into training, right? Like a corporate side, right? If you're primarily like a caregiver at home and your hobby is like Pilates, that's when you sign up to be like a Pilates instructor or a spin instructor or whatever. For me, it was like running and triathlon. It was like, well, you know enough about this, you can now be a coach, right? Ta-da, you were a little, so you stepped into it at 40. All right, very good. So, are you still, so then all right, so in a minute we're going to do the final questions. You've stepped into coaching. Tell people a little bit more about what you actually do today, how they can connect with you and find you online.
So the last, I would say, 2 years, I've been building this coaching practice. I have used, yes, did I leave my career in higher ed? Like, I have a master's in higher education, like, but I still have all of those skills. Like
Yeah.
all the skills I've learned are totally transferable to this coaching field, whether it's advising or, coaching or managing, preparing workshops or webinars and all the business stuff, like how to operate a business. So the past 2 years I've built this practice. I've been coaching. I started out coaching. I've always coached couples. I started off coaching couples with young children because that's what I was. I mean, my kids are six. They were like four, 3 or 4 when I started coaching. And I worked with them. So I had created, a 12-week program because I was like, it's more, and different coaches have different models, but in my knowledge of what I was bringing to the table, I was like, this isn't f easily fixed in like a couple of sessions. Like, if
Yeah.
you're having intimacy issues in your relationship, I need to be present with you like in real time. So I worked with couples for about 90 days. We went through, six different pillars of, relationships, talking about conflict, communication, shared responsibility, intimacy, and most of my business, honestly, was like word of mouth.
Yeah.
I'm a talker, I'm an extrovert. I went to a lot of mom groups, a lot of networking groups, and people, just seemed to find me when they needed me. And then I would say last November, so about a year and a half in, I sort of shifted my focus a little bit. So I spent a year and a half working with couples. And they would come to me because, like, oh, we have mismatched sex drives, or I want to and he doesn't, or, he would show up and, I want to have sex all the time and they don't. Like, it was all this like sex, 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 sex. But when I started working with them, I would say 90% of the issue had nothing to do with intimacy. So sex and intimacy was like a symptom,
Yeah,
lack
it's
thereof,
a yeah.
symptom
It's
of
a
what was
behavior,
really
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
And what was really going on was they were not communicating. The most of the time, I work mostly with heterosexual couples, so the female or the mom, was dealing with this like mental load of like all of that's going on and what it means to be a mom. And I would say to husbands, like, well, she's not having sex with you because she doesn't want to. She's not having sex with you because you said you'd take out the garbage and you didn't. And so like this was the core issue. So like when they would come to me for sex issues, we didn't even get to it sometimes, like because they couldn't get past this part. And so I was like, you know what? I'm not serving my audience in the best way. So I came across this strategy called Fair Play. I did
Yeah.
not
Oh,
create
yeah.
it. So Eve Rondosky was the creator of Fair Play. And
Yep,
it's
I recommend that
basically,
all the time.
yeah. So it's
Yeah.
basically a strategy of how managing your household and to reduce the mental load and create more of a fair, not equal, fair operation. And then me being a sex coach was like, if you can do this, then your intimacy and connection can be stronger. Eve doesn't really talk about that piece, but again,
Right.
with my background. So again, as a person who just builds all the time, I still coach couples for 90 days. That's more of like their second stop, I would say. But I would say most couples come into me to work on this Fair Play system first. And
So
so
yeah, that's I didn't know that. So did you go through and become a Fair
I
Play
did.
certified? Okay, so I am not a Fair Play certified person, and but when I'm working with step parents and there's domestic workload inequality, or somebody is like just melting under the pressure of like identity and whose job is what, I recommend the book, the game, and specifically the show. I'm like, you can turn on this documentary, which I think you have to buy now. For a while, it was streaming for free. You can like turn it on when your partner is like in the room and start the conversation. Because I think that the tools that that Fair Play offers for laying it out and having the conversation are really, really helpful, even though, like anything, you're going to probably get to a point where it's not perfect for your situation, right? Like, so, maybe in my case, there's a complicated extended family situation, but you can make that jump on your own from what they give you to what it is. That's super fascinating. So, you do Fair Play coaching, and you also do relationship intimacy coaching. And you have a website, which is.
My website is just my name, jennifer-melville.com.
Jennifer Melville. And you have a special offer for the audience, which now that we've had this whole discussion, this makes so much more sense to me. Divide and Thrive Workshop. Normally this is $3.99, but there's a $50 off coupon, and there's a link which is BYE50. But the best way, if you're listening to this or watching it, as everybody is, and you're driving or you're out for a walk or you're just not in a place with a pen, you don't actually have to remember all these details. The easiest way to get this is to be a part of the Imperfect Adulting email community, and I send it straight to your email box. It is also in the show notes everywhere you go. But if you sign up, I just pop it in there. You're notified of new episodes and links to everything that our guests mention. I will also put a link in for the Fair Play book just for fun, because that'll be there
And
for
that's what
that.
I do in the Divide and Thrive is I go through the Fair Play system with you.
Which is a really
Can ask the
valuable
hard
service.
conversations. I can, sort of point you in the right direction, talk about different things where sometimes when you're doing any kind of like self-help on your own, you might run into to walls and then you turn away. It's such a
Yeah.
great system that, I've created Divide and Thrive to sort of be that bridge between like, yes, you could do them on your own, but you're going to be much more successful if someone guides you through it and can ask the questions that you don't even know to ask.
Right. So, and then there's a level which is like the workshop level, and then there's a level working directly with somebody, which is, where you're actually involved in your actual situation. So those are things. That's fantastic. All right, Jen, are you ready for the final three questions?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it, just for fun. I think I know the answer to this, but I write these before I meet people. Do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
Oh my gosh, I'm definitely an extrovert, although I do have introverted tendencies sometimes, but not with groups of people, only on my own.
There you go. All right. What is the longest amount of time that you have ever been completely alone?
Oh gosh, since being a mom.
Oh,
So
right.
I would say about maybe 36 hours, and I'll tell
Okay.
this, I tell this to my coaching clients too. Like I go on momcations where I will rent a hotel room. I will leave at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I will go to the next town over and I'll stay in a hotel by myself. And I will, have dinner by myself, stay in a hotel, watch what I want to eat, read, whatever, go in the pool. Then I get up the next morning, I go thrifting, and then I come home 24 to 36 hours later.
That is spectacular.
I do it a couple times a year.
That is a really, really good idea. I'm one of those people where I feel like I have to like justify it for things, but that is, it's like when you spend a decade, 2 decades, like prioritizing everybody else because that's what family life is, it is so empowering to be like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this on TV because no one else is around.
That's my introverted tendency. Like I can spend
Yeah.
that 24 hours without anyone. I can go to dinner by myself, but
Yeah.
yeah, your momcation.
Absolutely. I love it. All right. Thinking back over your wonderful life so far, what is the scariest thing that you have chosen to do on purpose? So something like, say, oh my God, that's super scary, but I'm doing it anyway.
Wow, Amy, we just talked about all the things that happened to me that I don't do on purpose.
Yeah, but yeah, so.
I don't know that. Okay, so maybe I would say this kind of goes together because I did one for the other, even
Okay.
though don't judge me if you want. So I had gastric bypass in 2012
Right.
because I just, again, pretty confident person, but just felt like I needed a little bit more to feel better in my body to start dating.
Okay.
So, but then I, after my gastric bypass, 6 or 7 months later, I was feeling fantastic and I started online dating, like serial online dating. I was looking for like a husband. That's where I was like
Okay.
going on 3 different dates a week. So I would say that probably.
That's a big surgery. That is that like so I think that counts. Like I watched a video somebody the other day that she was talking about plastic surgery and she's like, I think they should tell people that this is going to hurt more than they do. And I was like, oh, they're cutting into your skin. Like I mean, I hear you, probably that's true, but also it is not a surprise to me that that would hurt because paper cut hurts a lot. So I yeah, like
Yeah, it def actually that hurt more than my C-section.
well, I believe, ouch. Oh my gosh. All right. Very good. So, very good. That's it. Jen Melville, thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I'm excited. Hopefully it resonated with some folks and they feel.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.